Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for February the 11th, 2022. This is episode number 97. On today's show, we'll be talking about Hyundai IONIQ 5 winter range and charging test, and the debut of the 2023 Kia Sportage FEV plug-in hybrid. So I'm Dominic Dione, Inside EVs forum moderator and Inside EVs editor. Joining us today is the estimable Tom Malogny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the multi-talented Mr. Martin Lee from the recently revamped EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial Hotel Regency out in Chicago, where he's there on behalf of Out of Spec Studios, and he also puts together Cars Gone Wild videos for the Inside EVs YouTube channel. All right, so before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to the channel. If you're watching us on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications. If you're watching us on Twitch, you can also ring that bell icon for notifications. All right, so with that out of the way, welcome everybody. So let's kick it off with our comment of the week, or Katwa for short. So our comment of the week comes from Friday's show when we had Anthony C. chimed in with 25 minutes before Kyle spoke. Who had 25 in the betting pool? So basically, I think we had skipped over Kyle. We left him out of the conversation for like 25 minutes. And
I was enjoying listening. It was great. I didn't even realize it.
We're hogged the mic, and he was sitting there, you know, patiently, just, you know, biding his time. So we're going to make up for that slight this week. And so let's kick this off with Kyle talking about his snowy adventures in the Tesla Model 3. It's booted up with Nokian Hakkapeliitta 10 studded EV winter tires. So the Out of Spec Reviews channel has a great video showing how they basically turned his Tesla Model 3 performance into a snowmobile. It was awesome, and you had snow everywhere. So tell us about it a bit, Kyle. Are these the best snow tires ever?
How did we select this story to talk about at the beginning of the show?
Because
this
it was awesome, man. It's like, yeah, great.
It was
look
cool. I had no idea. You know, for those who know, I don't look at the show notes before we start. So this is always a surprise when we, when I log in. Those of you who know, I own a Tesla Model 3 Performance. I've owned this car for 2.5 years. It's the longest I've ever actually owned a car for. And that's mostly because there hasn't been any major updates to the Model 3 chassis. If they said we're coming out with a electric hatchback Model 3 and it'll do whatever, I would do it. It's just there hasn't really been a reason to sell this car. It's been so good for us. And we teamed up with Nokian last year. They sponsored some of our content. We filmed a lot of things, and they gave us this set of Nokian studded tires. And you know, I thought that was pretty cool, but we actually kind of needed them this winter. So we threw them on because we've been having really icy roads recently. And so we slapped these things on in like the most ultimate aggressive snow tire combination, an EV specific studded winter tire paired with a very narrow 18-inch Martian wheel. For those who don't know Martian wheels, my friend Drew owns Martian wheels. We all know Drew. He made these very good snow wheels, very narrow. And yeah, we threw these things on, and I got to tell you, this car is completely unstoppable. We were in snow up to the hood, and it was just plowing through stuff that we couldn't even film because it was too deep for us. We were not even touching pavement. So we're just on top of snow, skating on the battery pack, and it's just chugging through. Totally magical. Really is quite a seriously aggressive bit of kit. And what's interesting about driving an EV in this much snow is you hear nothing.
Right.
Because there's no tire noise because you're not touching pavement. And so you're just driving in silence. It's like you're in this weird VR dream world. It's very cool.
Right on. So are those the best snow tires that you think you've ever had?
So they're definitely the most aggressive snow tires I've personally ever owned. They're not as aggressive as like a studded ice racing tire that wouldn't be street legal. These right. are still street legal. Nokian's studded technology is really good. The studs stay in the tires. I can't recommend them for most people because a studded tire is seriously aggressive. And again, studs don't help in snow. They help on ice.
That's right.
But what's interesting is coming this year for next winter, which is probably when most people will be making their next purchase, Nokian is having a non-studded version, basically, of these very aggressive tires. And that's going to be good for most people. However, in places where you get a lot of ice and you're constantly driving on snow, the studs are fine. There's very little downside. We've driven on warm days on, you know, hard pavement, and it is a bit noisier at low speed, but at high speed, you really don't notice it.
Also, I think you mentioned the performance of the Tesla Model 3 in that video as well. It just has like the right amount of slip. It has really good, you know, wheel control. I don't know if you want to mention that at all.
Yeah, so I tend to drive in the programmed slip start profile in the Tesla to just allow some more rotation, because you do want some higher wheel rotation than vehicle rotation or vehicle speed in deep snow. And really a magical drivetrain tuning on any electric car, but particularly Tesla just gets it so right. They do such a great job with this. And maybe a little bit of an update on this car coming up in a few days, maybe next week, I'm going to start filming the big 100,000 mile overview. Anyway, the car actually broke down on us last week, and the parking brake got locked on in the middle of Nebraska, and I had to go out with the Sprinter and bring a trailer, and it was just a disaster. So we finally decided to fix this parking brake issue, and it was just a sensor that needed to be plugged in. Now the car's fine.
Awesome.
Man. Yeah, it's amazing. 103,000 miles of pure abuse. We have not shown this car any mercy, and it Correct. Is fine.
Right. So, Kyle, the sensor got unplugged somehow?
It was probably our fault when we changed the brakes, mine mostly. I probably didn't push it back in all the way. But I think what was happening was it was loose, so we had this very intermittent warning. Whenever we had hit like rumble strips in the road or a bump, it would pop up and kill autopilot and say, your parking brake's not going to work. And it always performed fine. It just showed the warnings. And I'm like, I'll get to that at some point. And then, Alyssa was driving it in Nebraska. And she said, I don't know how this really happened, but she said that the car just locked the parking brake on her randomly while she was driving. And I'm like, well, that's pretty sketchy. So she got it on the side of the road. It'll be on Out of Spec Motoring. But there's like sheriffs looking under the car trying to help her plug this thing in. And yeah, everyone was doing their best to help. But she ended up driving on it to get to a safer spot with the parking brake locked on. I think warped the rear rotor. But again, the car, it was just a sensor.
Right on. Hey, all right. So, Kyle, you also had a couple of charging videos featuring the Hyundai Ioniq 5 this week. So one of those was a test to see if you could replicate the results. That you'd seen some from European owners who say charging power rates were very low, like around 30 kilowatts or something. So tell us about that video, how you set up the test and what happened, and maybe what conclusions you came to.
Well, the best part about having the Ioniq 5 this week was actually Tom also had the Ioniq 5 right. this week. So we were able to do, I'm sure we'll talk about that this show, we were able to do a ton of comparing and contrasting in sort of real time on the phone of what are you seeing, what are we seeing, and sort of talking about our testing procedures. This particular video was designed to set up sort of a worst case cold soak situation. It wasn't unbelievably cold. It did get down to, I believe, 7 degrees Fahrenheit, which is very cold. But by the time we shot this test, it warmed up pretty quick and it was still under freezing, but it was in the 20s. And what we did was we left the car outside overnight. My friend Zach left it at his house. We booted it up in winter mode, drove it to a DC fast charger. So winter mode should, in theory, heat up the battery a little bit. The idea was, you live in an urban environment that only has DC fast charging. You leave the car outside overnight. It's time to charge in the morning. What are you going to get by the time you get to the charger? And we got over 60 kilowatts on plug-in, which is very impressive. Now, I do believe we have a different battery pack than the European spec cars. Ours is a 77.4 kilowatt hour. I think theirs is a couple different, but now you guys are getting them. Is that true, Martin?
It's one module short. The first cars, it's one module less than the EV6, but we get them for the 2023 model year which if you order the car now, it's a December delivery. So that's the car you're going to get. So if you make a new, they just had problems ordering the four-wheel drive version, the all-wheel drive version of the IONIQ 5 in the UK as well. But I think you can order that now. I think if you order one now, you get it at the end of the year, maybe slipping into the beginning of next year, and you get the full-size battery pack. And while you're talking, did you guys, I should have mentioned this before we went live, get the press release from Hyundai yesterday, or was that a UK press release about the digital door mirrors and things?
Saw that, but not in the US, because nothing applied in that press release to our market.
Right. So yeah, 77.4 kilowatt hour battery pack, digital door mirrors, it says an option, and smart frequency dampers to improve the ride. And what was the other thing? Digital rear view camera. It's going under, because there's no wiper on the back.
That's right.
They're putting it under the top spoiler. It's still going to get pretty dirty, if you ask me.
Maybe they'll have the washer fluid.
They need some washer on that, yeah.
They need something on it, because it does get pretty dirty back there. And also, they are adding battery conditioning to the UK models as well, which is different to winter mode. But I think if you spec the Eco Pack, then you get the heat pump, though really that should have been on all the cars, but don't get me started. Then it's not just this kind of winter mode, but it's a proper battery conditioning that if you navigate within the car's nav, if you navigate to a DC fast charger, whether it needs to heat up the pack or cool down the pack, it will do that. But that is from the 2023 model year. No news on whether they're adding back in the drive resistance.
Can we just talk about how Hyundai released this incredible car with the best drivetrain architecture and everything is so far advanced, but they didn't think about warming it up before getting to a charger?
Well, I don't understand how that wasn't part of the original spec of the car. And I think it is just if you have the heat pump. And again, European spec, UK spec, US spec all changes slightly. Even the names of the specs are different, which is frustrating to compare, you know, apples to apples. But if you do have the heat pump, I think you can get it. And I don't know why this can't be an over-the-air update. If you have the heat pump, every IONIQ 5 owner now, and they've been out a year over here, should be getting this feature, if you ask me. It shouldn't be a return to dealer, or it shouldn't be a paid upgrade. It should be, we're sorry we messed up in the first place. It's coming over the air. Does the IONIQ 5 even have over-the-air updates yet?
Not that we've seen deployed.
Not that I've seen.
World.
So it's frustrating for those early owners. At least the new cars will have it. But yeah, anyway, back to your review.
I think, Martin, one sec. You're a little you're a little out of focus, or I'm still drunk. I'm not really sure. But
sorry about that. Yeah. Probably focusing on the microphone rather than me, which is no bad thing.
The mic was perfect.
Yeah, okay. If you want to see this, it's absolutely perfect. But
right,
you know, and I did some charging on mine. I had, as Kyle mentioned, I had an IONIQ 5 Limited. For a week, I did the range test. That video is up on Inside EVs. We're going to talk about that a little later.
Yeah.
But I also charged it a lot. I charged it two times. I charged it from 10 to 80%, one on a 150 kilowatt charger, one on a 350, just to see if there's any difference. And then the last time after I finished the range test, I charged it from 0 to 100. So I have three solid recordings of it in New Jersey, where it was a little bit colder. Well, not colder than Kyle saying he charged it once in the 20s. And the both times I did 10 to 80%, it finished within 10 seconds of each recording. It was like perfect. And it was exactly 30 minutes from 10 to 80%, which Hyundai says it's 18 minutes, but that's obviously in better conditions. Right. Now, the vehicle I had was a Limited, so it had the heat pump. I had battery warming on. I drove it really hard to the charging station, and I actually drove it down to 2% state of charge, put it on DC fast charger, charged it up to like 15 or 16%, then got back in it and drove it hard down to 10% to try to give it a little bit of a boost to warm it up some. And it still, I didn't see anything near the power that it should be taking in. I think I maxed out at like 160 kilowatt, somewhere like that. But like Kyle, every time I plugged in, I didn't, even the times I didn't try to pre-warm it, I pulled just about 70 kilowatts, 68, 67 immediately. I didn't see any of that 30 kilowatt that we saw in, you know, some of the European charge recordings. So, to be honest with you, I don't know how effective the winter mode is with the battery warming. I think it just really keeps the battery from getting critically cold. I don't think it works nearly as well as, say, the Taycan or the Lucid Air or Tesla vehicles, where it's really preconditioning the battery for DC fast charging, trying to get it up to that optimal temperature so that you can really pull a lot of power. I don't think currently it's set up to do that. I think it's just set up so that if it's really cold, like the battery won't get like, 0 degrees Celsius, So they need to do some work on that. And Kyle's 100% right that it's surprising. They did so many things right, and they really dropped the ball on battery, battery management with temperature wise.
So on your test, Kyle, did you do it from 0 to 100 in the cold like that?
Yep. And yeah, saw really good speeds, but we probably drove it harder than you, Tom, would be my guess, because we were probably getting a few, I don't know. We ripped on this thing to warm it up because we just had to get it hot. So we were like, wide open throttle, big regen, plug it in, 240 kilowatts. But, we just had the space to do that where we are.
Yeah, I didn't have the space, but I did it. I let me tell you, I was getting looks and people were blowing the horn at me. I'm not afraid to do that. As I was going down Route 287 to the charging station, full throttle till about 80, 90 miles an hour, full regen down to 50 miles an hour, full throttle up to 90 miles an hour as I'm going down the road, and people around me are like giving me the finger and everything, and I'm like smiling and waving. So Kyle, I know how to do that, and I'm not afraid to do it, but I didn't do it probably as long as you did. I only did it for about 10 or 15 minutes on the way to the charging station from my house.
Yeah. So, we gave it a full hour and a half.
Yeah. So, and that's what it needs.
Yeah. And yeah, it's just, actually it's a good thing that it doesn't really heat up with hard driving that quickly, because it shows that there's not much resistance in the internal drivetrain and battery pack, and you really shouldn't have heat loss. But, I'm sure as the cars age and they have more DC charging, they'll build up more resistance and they'll heat up quicker. Look, it's hard to really heat these things up properly. Anyway, what I found was I put up a whole half hour long video explaining all of my charging sessions from A to Z, all of the variabilities, everything I believe as to why we're seeing these interesting things on our deep charging test when we analyze curves. I have two different charging tests I've done with these cars and two different locations. And basically it's a really strong start with a taper, and then the other one's a pretty slow start and it tapers up. And so completely opposites. And I explain why I think that's the case. And it's all in a 30-minute video on Out of Spec Reviews. And I could probably talk about it for 2 hours, but we don't need to bore everyone with that. There's already content on YouTube about it.
So you did two videos, and that was the second one as well that you did with the two sessions?
Correct. So the second video that went up after the cold gating video is probably, if you're interested in how the car charges, all of my findings, everything that I've heard and seen and experienced with the car, and sort of posing some questions as well. It's sort of the state of charging on Ioniq 5 right now, if you will, based off of my experience.
But, and you also mentioned in your first video that you had it had been updated. You had the software update number there. I don't know. If you and Tom are in the same software?
Well, this is interesting because Hyundai claims that software doesn't affect the drivetrain of the car. It was just user interface update. It's very possible, but I think we have sufficient evidence to say that perhaps there is a software update on the cars, and we might not be looking at the right software in the system. There might be another level that does drivetrain, because on every version, Kia EV6, which has the same battery pack, and Hyundai Ioniq 5 a couple times, I have DC charged these cars on multiple sessions in different continents. And every time at around 82 or 83% state of charge, it dips to basically zero. The charger will supply the load on the car. So your heat, your cooling pumps, your air conditioning pumps, and then it holds there for like 160 to 300 seconds and then comes back up. And what it's doing at these states of charge is doing a battery check. The Hyundai Ioniq 5, we're right in that state of charge right now. You'll see, actually, this might be my first recording earlier on. You'll see this one dip down, I believe. Yeah, we're towards the end of the video. This is what it does. It goes down to 7. All the charger's just supplying the car the base load of what the car needs. And it does this as a battery check. What I asked the engineers about it, they're looking at all of the different modules, making sure the voltages are the same before they top charge the car. Zach's car, after many long and warm DC fast charging sessions just like this, did not exhibit that behavior. And I think that's proof enough that there must be a different software on the car. And 32 gigabyte software update is true. It is a 32 gigabyte software update that we installed to this Ioniq 5. But actually, other Hyundai owners, non-electric, like a Sonata owner, commented that they also had a 32 gigabyte software update for their user interface. So it couldn't be drivetrain related if they're telling the truth.
Wow, that's kind of crazy. That's a lot of gigabytes.
Kyle, I haven't watched your video yet. How long did it take to before it shut off, 0 to 100? Do you remember?
Yeah, both were around 40 minutes or so.
0 to 100? Okay, and mine was 55.
Yeah, nothing was touching 50. Yeah, so, there were over 40, both of them. But I think it was like 38 minutes to 95% in one of them, something like that.
So, well, since I did mine after the 70-mile-an-hour highway range test, I couldn't have battery warming on, winter mode on, during the range test, or it would have cut into the range. So, you know, I rolled in, you know, on a driving a constant 70 miles an hour, which doesn't strain the battery at all, you know, and on a cold day. So I wasn't expecting, you know, really to set any records. And it's good that, you know, what I like about it is that what we, Kyle and I have, you know, between the two of us, maybe six or seven recordings now on the Hyundai Ioniq 5, and they're all under different conditions, doing different things. Like I tried to warm the battery up, but I didn't do it for an hour and a half like Kyle did, you know. So, you know, we have different representations of different situations in different temperatures, which the more data, the better, you know. No, there is no one charging curve on any electric vehicle. You know, it's the people drive them in different temperatures, all different states of charge plugging in. So it's good that, you know, between all these recordings that we put out there, people can, the more you watch, the more of the big picture you'll get of Ioniq 5 charging, which is, you know, I think part of what's so good about when Kyle and I do things, the same thing, you know, it's not just like, oh, well, I watched Tom's video, I don't need to watch Kyle's video. That's not true. Same with the range test, same with the charging.
I'll put you to sleep.
Watch as many as you can, because you'll always, you know, pick up something different in each one of our recordings.
Right. When we boil it down to it, if you own an Ioniq 5, plug it into the charger and don't worry about it. But if you're nerds like us, you will worry about it. And right. This is what I dig into. Hyundai was so confused when I kept asking them all these questions. They're like, what did the car charge? I'm like, yes, but it didn't like charge the way that I thought. And they were like, what are you talking about?
Well, talk about Hyundai being confused. So, you know, the and I don't mean to be a beat up Hyundai session. I love the Ioniq 5. I tell you, after the week, honestly, I really want to buy one. And I actually talked to Kyle about this. Like, I like want to sell my Model 3 and get one, but we're not into that right now. When I was doing the Inside EV's 70 mile an hour highway range test, one of the things we like to do is talk about the EPA rated range. We like to talk about the highway EPA rated range. The EPA stopped listing city and highway EPA range ratings for some of the vehicles. They just give you the combined. And while, you know, we'll use that as a measuring stick, it's not that fair when we do highway range tests. We should talk about highway range ratings. But in any event, the Ioniq 5 has a 19-inch wheel and tire combo and a 20-inch wheel and tire combo. But they're both rated at the same range on the EPA site. And that's goes against what we've all really come to realize with electric cars. Wheel and tire combinations make a big difference.
Right.
And a lot of times the OEMs will test different, all their wheel combinations and say, look, like Tesla's famous for that. If you put the 22-inch wheels on, it goes 340 miles. If you have the 19-inch, it goes 400 miles. So, you know, it makes a big difference. But for some reason, the Ioniq 5 has the same range rating with both tire and wheel combinations. So I reached out to Hyundai to find out, you know, did you just, because what Hyundai could do is test the one that's least efficient and then just say that's the range for all the cars, you know, for the
Ioniq. That's what Porsche does.
Yeah, they can't list the most efficient one, you know, and then say that. So the crazy thing is that I'm going to have to look up the exact, because I don't know what the answer I got from Hyundai was. Classic. Like, I don't even understand what they're saying. I'm gonna pull that up in a little bit after we talk a little bit. I'm gonna pull my email. It just hit me right now, but I got the answer yesterday, and I don't even know how to like incorporate this into my articles. Wait till I pull the comment.
Well, here's the thing. It is very difficult. We most journalists, which are what the automakers are equipped to handle, are, you know, high level vehicle evaluations. How many USB ports? Does it drive nice? What's the 0-60? What's the competition? What's the price? We're getting into, you know, in the combustion side, it's, hey, my 1.6 liter supercharger actually overheats after 17 pulls at 5,400 feet of elevation. And like any automaker be like, what? We're talking like, hey, my car's normally pulling 300 amps at 27% state of charge, but I'm only seeing 274. They are not equipped to handle this level of detail. And, right, you know, some automakers are, Ford, really good, Porsche, really good, because they know and they're prepared for our level of deep coverage. A lot of these automakers launching cars, I'm actually helping them learn about their vehicles so that they are better prepared to handle questions from journalists that might be digging in more. What it really boils down to is, you know, my whole thing is this: all of our deep level testing, range testing, charging testing doesn't actually really matter, in my opinion, for most people, because the car goes far enough on a charge and it charges fast enough for pretty much anyone, even if it is cold. 67 kilowatts is livable. Just plug it in and walk away. I'm knocking things over. But it really does, you know, when we do our testing, we're on our own. It's very hard to get support from engineers and other people to really help us here. And so we just have to report on what we find and set up the conditions that we think are you know, ideal for the car to perform its best when we do our testing. And look, we're living in the real world. I have to say, Ioniq 5 is awesome, really good car. It's very, you know, basically what it's doing is it's an algorithm that changes its charging curve based off of temperature in real time. It's not like Mustang Mach-E that has these set ledges. It's not like ID4 that has kind of a flat curve. It's not like Big E-Tronc that can just sit at 150 pretty much nonstop unless it's a frozen ice brick. It just changes, and that's okay for us to live with, and every charging session will be a little bit different.
So I found the email. Let me go back to this now. So I sent them a long email explaining the two wheel sizes. Some OEMs will certify each size and so forth and so on. I was, as you know, I explained it as much as I could because I know that there was going to be a question. So the first answer came back, okay, let me get the best way to explain this to you. I'll get back to you. And now this is, I'm not going to name names, but this is a senior, you know, service and technology manager in public relations. So here's the final answer. Tom, it's a harmonic average based on the anticipated sales volumes of the two trim levels.
Oh, well, okay. So basically what they did was they took the big wheels and the small wheels, averaged the figures, and said 98% of the cars are going to be SEL. So it's a primarily weighted factor of the smaller wheels, which I've never seen done before.
Yeah, that's an interesting approach.
And that's exactly, Tom, that's exactly what I answered. Very interesting approach. Thanks for the information. Like, I've never heard anybody, you know, that's how they base that average. So it's,
well, it makes sense why there's so many base cars coming to the U.S. then, because it's so – everyone wants – here's the thing. Hyundai approached this launch that Hyundai buyers were going to buy the Ioniq 5. So they did, you know, 80% – I don't know the numbers. The bulk of cars are the mid-spec, which I don't think is packaged very well for our market. It's missing glass roof. It should at least have that. ID4 has it in mid-spec, and it's way cheaper. So that, to me, is just a miss on their part. Mid-spec is the bulk of the cars. Base spec is like the second. And then your top limited trim is the one that they projected no one would want. And I think in the real world, we're seeing the exact opposite. People are settling for lower trim cars because they can't get top trim limiteds. And I think the EV buyer, especially an early adopter of this level of EV technology, is not your traditional Hyundai buyer. And they want all the stuff. They're the nerds. Give us everything. We want the reclining seat. We want the good sound system. Got the good wheels. And I think they messed up in their packaging and ordering levels for the US, in my opinion.
Interesting. Hey, Tom, before we move on from the charging part, I just wanted to say that, so your test, you ran that after doing your your 70 mile an hour range test. And so it was very, I think, reflective of, I think, of what most people will see in the real world in the wintertime and at the temperatures that you ran it at. So I just wanted, if you could just give us a really quick breakdown of the temperature and then the times, 0-100, but really the time from 20-80 is really the key thing, just to reiterate that.
Yeah. So the temperature when I started the range test was about 20 degrees Fahrenheit. When I finished it, it had gotten up to, I think, 37, 38 degrees Fahrenheit, which is you know, a little above zero, a couple degrees Celsius, I guess. So that's when I plugged in. And, you know, I plugged in, it was in the mid to high 30s, and it pretty much stayed in that temperature for the whole charging session. And it actually charged a little bit quick. I was really focusing on 10 to 80, Dom, not 20 to 80.
Okay.
And as I mentioned earlier, the two times earlier, I just did a 10 to 80, not 0 to 100. It took exactly 30 minutes both times on a 150 kilowatt and a 350 kilowatt station. Now, this was on a 350 kilowatt station plugged in at zero. And it took 33 minutes to get to 80%. But if you, and I think it was 6 minutes, it was 6 minutes to get to 10%. So if you subtracted the time it took to 10, the 10 to 80 was 27 minutes, 3 minutes quicker than when I just did the 10 to 80s.
Okay, that's not so far outside of the what do they quote? Is it 10 to 80 that they quote in 18 minutes?
Yeah, 10 to 80, 18 minutes. So listen, it's still, even in a, if you want to call it poor charging for the Ioniq 5, it's still pretty good.
That's the moral of the story.
Yeah, it's still like, it's still charged to 100%, and nobody should be charging to 100%.
Right.
We've gone over this many times.
Right.
For me, it's still charged to 100% in under an hour, like 53 minutes. Kyle was under 50 minutes. So, you know, the even in its, like, say, poorest charging conditions, 10 to 80 in a half an hour, that's pretty good. You know, that's not bad compared to other electric vehicles. And this was in its worst charging form. So it's only going to get better than that as the temperature warms up.
And we'll probably do this again in the summertime, right?
I'm going to request one. You know, I'm sure Kyle and I will both ask for a vehicle when it's warm. We'll do warm range tests because we did cold weather range tests and warm charging.
We have one now because one of the guys who works for us it owns it. So we'll be doing all the stuff. Can we talk about something I don't think I even told any of you guys about up to this point, but I just wanted to mention it because Ford is so awesome. They let me ride in their F-100 electric pickup truck yesterday.
Oh, the Illuminator. Awesome. The
Illuminator. Yeah, I got to go for a rip in it. We did a huge burnout. It was awesome. Really cool.
You have that on video?
Yeah, it's on Out of Spec Reviews this morning. So that was
okay.
Yeah, it just went up and actually went up during the podcast. Awesome.
Maybe Martin can line that up real quick while I mention that. So we've been doing a couple of midweek bonus shows. So if you haven't seen them yet, last Monday we sat down with Brian Gu from XPeng Motors. He's the president and vice chairman of the Chinese automaker, and it was a great interview. They don't sell their cars here yet, but they do in Europe, and they're expanding. They just announced some expansion in Europe as well. And so that's great. If you haven't seen that yet, definitely check that out. And then yesterday we spoke with Ford, Ryan from Ford. His last name.
O'Gorman,
that's right. And he was telling us about the Ford Intelligent Backup Power system for the F-150 Lightning. So if you have any questions on that, we give him all these questions that will, you know, everything that Tom's listeners or viewers had asked about over after several videos covering that. So that I thought really hit a lot of all the top points for that feature. And so if you have any interest in powering your home from your truck, definitely check that out. And Tom, next week we have something else.
Yeah, so you know, we've been doing more and more of these midweek shows. The listeners and viewers seem to want them. So we're going to start. I mentioned a month or so ago that we were interested in doing an infrastructure series. And we got a lot of comments from people saying, yeah, do that. That would be awesome. So we've been setting this up now, and we're going to have one show a week for the next 4 or 5 weeks. We're going to try to do them on Monday mornings at 10 a.m. Eastern live. So you guys can ask us questions. Some of them might be on Tuesdays, but so far we're setting this stage for Mondays at 10. And we already have the first one scheduled next week, and it is with Electrify America. They're sending on Rob Barassa, who's the Senior Director of Business Development and Marketing for Electrify America. So this isn't some low-level guy. He's way up at the top of the company. And we're going to be asking him about, you know, Electrify America, their current state, their future, where they're going, where they see the industry going. We're going to ask questions ourselves. We're also going to pull questions from the viewers. So make sure you tune in this Monday, 10 a.m. And we're going to have a nice chat with Rob and talk Electrify America and infrastructure.
And we also have a few other networks coming up too, right?
Yeah, we have ChargePoint is on board. It looks like EVgo, although we haven't gotten the official, yeah, we're definitely coming, but yeah, we want to do this. I've already gotten, so looks like we're going to do Electrify America, ChargePoint, EVgo for sure. And then we're going to have some another show with representatives from utilities, the people that work with within the electric vehicle infrastructure departments in public utilities. We'll talk about the challenges utilities have with adding these massive, you know, charging stations that require so much power. And this is really a unique industry challenge for the utilities, because, you know, some of these charging station sites command as much power as like a small town. So, you know, they wouldn't expect to just add a town here and there in the middle of where there's already towns. So it's a challenge. And we also have, we're going to have somebody from Europe come on and talk about, you know, the state of infrastructure in Europe. So this is going to be 4 or 5 weeks in a row and live. So you'll be able to ask your questions.
Right on. All right. So let's, Martin, do you have that Illuminator video backup? Sorry. There we go. So this is, Kyle, this is like what, a custom, is this the Mach-E drivetrain in that?
Yeah, so the point of this truck is not that Ford is making an F-100. They could never, it doesn't pass crash anymore. Like, this is, right, you know, old school. The point of this video and this this vehicle is to showcase a crate motor that you can purchase from Ford or their distributors that essentially is a powertrain. And the nice thing about buying an electric motor new from a trusted supplier such as Ford, in my opinion, is that it's just going to work. It's reliable, right? They put this in a production car. It's no different than a rear-wheel drive Mach-E. We haven't really heard of these things breaking down. It's a solid piece of motor. And it's the small rear motor, so it's just under 300 horsepower, just over 300 pound-feet of torque. Pretty spicy for old cars. It's going to be more than what you get. And you get all that torque at zero, which is great. And you can configure it any way you want. They don't sell you the inverter, the controller, the battery pack. It's just the motor. So they built this vehicle to highlight that particular piece. And it's an entire Mach-E, basically, in a pickup truck. It has the same 100 kilowatt hour battery pack, 88 usable. It has the same charging port on the side. It looks so well integrated. It has a Mach-E interior with Mach-E seats that function and the big screen. Everything's fully integrated. Everything fully works. I don't even think the system knows it's in a pickup truck. I think it thinks it's in a Mach-E, but it's awesome. It was cool, and we just took it around a little bit. Now, other outlets bigger than Out of Spec, of course, are taking it out and doing bigger stories. I hope we could do that one day. And I thought one that was really interesting was Hagerty took it to a full track day and ripped it around the racetrack. And I just absolutely loved that they did that. So, you know, the chances of us getting to play around with this again are slim, although I would love to. I think it's a great idea that Ford is making this electric motor. And it's right up my alley, because I am thinking about sort of a new daily car for myself. And I've been going from everything from the new Golf R to, you know, a classic something. And I would really love to electrify a classic Range Rover. You get rid of all the engines that suck and put in an electric drivetrain. And I'm a Range Rover nerd, so this would be a very interesting motor to put in there. So, you know, that's the idea of these projects.
Right on. Hey, is that motor, is that between the back wheels, or is that up in front somehow? Was it a traditional drive shaft?
Yeah, and they had an outside company do all the work. So I don't know how familiar Mark was with all of everything, but essentially my understanding is the motor's up front, runs a drive shaft to the back without question. I think they probably could have found a way to mount it on the rear, but if you already have the driveline and the drive shaft and it's rated for the power, why not just mount it up front? And that's totally fine. You're not going for max efficiency with these things.
Right. I have, I have an old Ford Ranger in my garage. And if I electrified that, I would want to keep the original drivetrain, you know, the standard, it's a standard shift four-wheel drive. So I keep my four-wheel drive, all that. You know,
just leave it in like third gear all the time or something.
Yeah. And I can use, that'll let me use a smaller electric motor too, which is more affordable.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it has, well, I think this motor is like $4,000. It wasn't too bad.
That's not so bad. Yeah.
Yeah. For like a legit Ford brand new electric motor. Don't quote me on the price. I just think it's around there is what Jordan told me.
Right. How many kilowatts did you say?
So someone commented 210 kilowatts. They didn't know the kilowatt number when I was there with the vehicle.
Yeah, that's not bad. That's not bad for that price.
Perfect. Slap two of these bad boys on there. $8,000. You got a 420 kilowatt output thing. That's awesome.
You got to buy the batteries though.
Yeah.
That's the expensive part.
Right. Salvage Tesla batteries or something.
A lot of used laptop batteries and tape them together.
Don't do that. if it worked for the original Roadster, I'm sure it'll work for your Range Rover.
Right.
That'd be a great YouTube series. I'd watch everyone. If you did like a YouTube series over 20, 30 parts of it in the shop and, you know, taking out the oily bits, I'd watch every one of those. That'd be amazing.
A lot of people would. And it could be a how-to, Kyle, because a lot of people are interested in doing this. Right, and, you know, if you showed people how you did it on your vehicle, that might give people more confidence that they can convert their vehicle. So that'd be an awesome series.
I'm not sure the exact vehicle. It'd be a Ranger or a classic Mini or a Defender or something like that, because I love British cars, but they're notoriously unreliable. And so, you know, would like to sort of fix some of that. Anyway, if anyone's interested watching from an industry standpoint that has something that could work for that, let me know. This is probably not going to happen anytime soon. Right. But yeah, it would be cool to do it.
Well, no one really does that anymore. Like Jack Rickard used to do that on EVTV, and you could watch along every week and get like very in-depth, like, they really get into the weeds of everything, and it's really great for people who want to do their own project. You know, it leaves out no surprises.
I would like to cover more of these builds. I just don't know if they'll perform well or not. It's such a new world. So I'll tell you right now that the Illuminator is not performing very well on our channel. And so if like the best one doesn't work that well, I'm not sure there's really a business case to build something else.
Right. Stuart mentions that this is a job for Rich Rebuilds, but even Rich, you know, doesn't get into that, the kind of details like that. You know, you if you watch his videos, you can't just like go out to your garage and do it yourself. There's going to be a big learning curve if you end up trying going that path. But we should get back really to the Hyundai IONIQ 5 winter 70-mile-an-hour highway range test that that Tom did. So we've talked a lot about charging. So, and last week we had Kyle had already did a 70-mile-an-hour range test, but he started with outside temperatures around 60 degrees Fahrenheit, and he got, I think, was it 227 miles on your charge?
Yeah, so a little bit colder than that. It was low, it was like 51, but the average of the test was probably 44, 45, and we ended up just about freezing. Definitely got colder as, you know, we did it, you know, afternoon, got dark, got cold. We live in the high desert. We don't retain much moisture in the ground. The temperature swings are wild. And so Tom did it in much colder temperatures on wider tires. We should talk about the tire selection for a second too, Tom, because this is interesting.
So when I started out, it was 20 degrees. When I ended, it was about 38 degrees. When Kyle started out, it was about 51, 52. And he ended probably about the same, right, Kyle, in the 30s?
Yeah, it was like freezing. It was like 32 or 31, something.
Yeah, it was warming up for me. It was cooling down for Kyle, but it was colder for me. And the car did sit out overnight. You know, it was in my garage, but my garage still gets cold when it's, you know, down to 10 degrees overnight. The garage is like in the 30s. So the car cold soaked in 30 degree temperatures overnight. And I did take it to an Electrify America charging station and charged it up from about 50%. It wasn't the whole full charge. And I was quite disappointed, quite honestly. Now, I did have as Kyle mentioned, I had a Limited. So it had the 20 inch wheels with the 255/45. R20 Michelin tires, and it wasn't the Michelin, just like I had the same model tires as you did, Kyle. It wasn't I forgot what the Precept, what are they called, the Michelin Precept or something like that,
right? But it's different season than the other Limiteds.
What's that? That's what you said, that you had driven a Limited and it had the Michelin EV specific tires.
When I asked Hyundai about it, they were unaware that there was not an EV specific tire, this one individual that you had on your car. They didn't know the car was on that tire, basically. And they basically said they're going to look into it. I haven't heard back, but it doesn't really matter that much. A lot of times OEs will spec two or three different tires for each wheel size that are approved in case there's manufacturing concerns or things like that. I do think, though, for you, they know you're doing range testing. They know, you know, I guess our numbers are small, but they're really meaningful. I would think they would send you a car on the EV specific tire.
Yeah. And well, it wasn't. And we finished up with 195 miles at 70 miles an hour, you know, far short of the EPA's combined range rating of 256. But as I mentioned earlier, you know, we try to find the EPA highway range rating, but this wasn't published. But still, it would have been much lower than that in any event. You know, we set the car up the same as Kyle did, goes in eco mode. We turn off winter mode, so there's no battery preheating to sap some energy. Check the speedometer. Both Kyle and I found that the speedometer was right on with the Ioniq 5. That's not always the case. A lot of times we have to bump up the cruise control to 71 or 72 miles an hour because the speedo's off. It's not in the Ioniq. It's right on at 70 miles an hour. There was very little wind. You know, tire pressure was set at manufacturer spec perfectly right on. Actually, they gave me the car with it perfect. I didn't have to really mess with it. You could see there, if you're watching on YouTube, I set up the four different quarters of the range test, and we drove 53 miles from 100 to 75%, 50 miles from 75 to 50, another 50 miles from 50 to 25, and then only 42 miles from 25% down to zero. And I pulled off the highway. It actually hit zero with about 40 miles driven and 193 miles driven. And then, as Kyle and I always do, you know, pull off the highway and we'll maybe drive at a lower speed, 40 or 50 miles an hour for a couple of miles until the battery just seems like it doesn't want to give you any more. Once you stop getting really any kind of pedal response when you push the accelerator, that's when I end the range test, because you're getting close to just completely running out. And that was at 195 miles. Pretty disappointing as far as I'm concerned.
For the size of the battery, right? That's
Yeah. And it's a 77 kilowatt hour battery. You know, I really was expecting about 210. I knew I was going to get a little bit less than Kyle. It was cold. So to be fair to the vehicle, it wasn't going to get, you know, it was going to get 20 or 30 miles less, maybe even, you know, than it would have been if it was warm out. But I had in our, you know, when we do these range tests, we always want to start and end up at the same charging station, because we do these loop style tests. And the way I had it plotted out, I would have ended up at the place I started at, like 212 miles, something like that, which I was figuring we were going to do 215. But, you know, as once I got to about 70% state of charge, 20% state of charge, I said, okay, I'm not going to make it. So now I got to pull out the app and look for, and there are a couple of Electrify America stations that I can stop off at. And there was one which was, you know, about 15 miles short of the original one I planned on. So that's where I ended it up. I couldn't even make the station I planned on stopping at. And, you know, it's cold out. The tires make a big difference. A lot of the followers also even mentioned, well, Kyle, where Kyle is, the air's thinner. There's less resistance, you know, so that, you know, all these things add up. You know, everything took 5 miles off, 5 miles off, 10 miles off. And all of a sudden, you know, I end up with, you know, 30 miles less than what Kyle did, basically, you know, in the same time,
just a little bit colder. And to be expected. I think really the cold not only impact the cold affects EVs in two ways. You have to burn more energy to keep the cabin warm and the battery pack warm, but it also lessens the available usable capacity out of the high voltage battery pack. Mm-hmm. So you can't actually get every last drop of juice out of it. Sometimes if you leave an EV at like 10% state of charge overnight and then it really warms up during the day, I'll notice my Tesla go like 12, 13, 14%
more miles
because it's just gaining a bit of natural energy by being warm. And so, you know, temperature affects voltage levels at extremes. And so Hyundai might be protecting us going into the bottom of the pack. It's possible these things will do 250, 260 miles in the warm weather on the good wheels, not only just because it has less of a load, but also because there's more available energy in the battery pack. We do our best to counteract this by DC fast charging them up. But honestly, 100 miles into the trip, that's 100 miles of air, cold air blowing over your battery pack. Sure. Yeah, it's got a lot of thermal mass. It's like a 1,200 pound battery, but that'll cool it down over 100 miles. And so the cold is, that's why we do cold tests. It's why we do warm tests. I wonder if running winter mode would get a better result though, because it would keep the battery warm. You'd have to burn the energy, but then the battery would be warm and there might be more usable capacity. It might even out But this is what I was considering when we did our range test at 227 at the end. I was like, yeah, the last few percent, we kind of just blew right through it. And I'm like, I think the car's freaking out a little bit here. Probably would have been actually better to have some heat in the battery pack. And, well, it is what it is.
Yeah. And I mean, you look at my last quarter, Kyle. Oh, sorry. I thought you were done talking. You look at the last 25% and I only did 42 miles. The same thing happened to me. It really blew, like the percentage kept dropping much quicker as I got down to the end. And one thing I will note was because I had the Limited, it has the panoramic glass roof. Even though it was a cold day, it was a bright sunny day and that sun was beating into the cabin. So I didn't need to use much heat. I had it set on 68 like we always do, only fan setting one. And it really wasn't working hard to keep me nice and warm. As a matter of fact, the Ioniq does tell you where all your percentage of energy goes. And I only used 3% of energy for cabin heating, which is not a lot, you know? So I think that that really aided it. And it was 2% for electronics just to run the car. So I think I finished up with 95% of the energy we used was dedicated solely for propulsion. But as Kyle said, as the battery gets colder, there's just not as much usable energy there as it would be in the same pack if it was 20 or 30 degrees warmer.
And I think we have almost proof of that in your numbers, Tom, because your efficiency didn't really change, but your miles driven from each percentage point did. And on that would indicate that at least you know, either the battery capacity is lessening as the test goes on, or the BMS is just not equalizing those 25% chunks from a customer visual standpoint, because some cars do massage the numbers for customer visuals. You know, we've seen Tesla do this too as well, where sometimes, you know, certain percentage ranges aren't actually equal to the rest. And a lot of this is BMS sway, and it's this car on this day, and how was it treated before you got it? And we're getting down to the nitty gritty percents of this test, but yeah. It's always hard to have a perfect repeatable test. That's why we never say this is replicatable. It's what we experienced in real time.
Yeah. Mark, could you pull that last graphic back up of the percentages? One thing I want to point out, if you notice in the first leg, I went the furthest, 53 miles, but my efficiency was the worst. It kind of doesn't make sense, but when you think about it, that was because that's when I probably used the most energy to heat the cabin, because as I was DC fast charging the car, it was sitting in the parking lot and the cabin was cold. So I hop in the car to begin this test and the heater was probably working the hardest in the beginning. So I used the most energy to heat the cabin. Then once it got up to a nice temperature and the sun came out and it was shining in the cabin, the heater was using less energy. So that's why the efficiency and the miles driven don't drive, but it's because I believe, at least, it was because I used the most energy to warm the cabin in that first leg.
Anyway, everyone's always curious, okay, how's the Ioniq 5 versus X in this scenario? And we are going to answer that question for you in a couple weeks. We're going to run Ioniq 5 next to EV6, next to Mach-E, next to ID4 in a range test all at the same time, and we'll let you know.
And I have one last thing that I know we need to move on, Dom, but no, talking about comparison videos, I have a friend who has a 2017 Chevy Bolt with, I think, like 70 or 80,000 miles, and he's getting the battery upgrade, or replacement, not upgrade.
Right, right.
You know, GM. So what I've been toying with, and what do you guys think about this, if I should do this? I was thinking about doing a range test right before it goes in, and then he gets the new battery, and then we do it like two or three days later, so the temperature's kind of the same, and yes, doing a range test with that and seeing what the difference is. I'm on the fence if that, you think that'd be something that the followers would like to see?
Well, I mean, that's something I'd like to see.
Yeah, but it's cool, but it's not going to help someone buying
this. I know. System. That's how I'm kind of like, should
well,
I do
I'm kind
it?
Of curious, because I'm looking at, you know, I'm looking at the Bolt. If the price dropped down far enough, you know, because there might be some hesitancy to buy them because they have had issues or whatever. So I'm thinking this, and with the new batteries, I have, you know, a fair amount of confidence in them. But I've seen some people report when they get their battery replacements that they're showing, like, they have all this extra range, like way more than they've ever had before. But I think when they start driving, it goes back closer to normal. But it would, I think it would be interesting to see. But I guess,
well, hey, Tom,
leave your comments and let us know what you think.
Here's how you do it. If you're going to be skipping a Hummer EV like range test, don't skip it for that. Oh, but yeah, if you got nothing else going on, let's see it.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards maybe doing it. It's just two days kind of back to back in a 2017 Bolt, driving them for 4 hours. You know,
no lane center.
That's pretty refreshable. That's yeah.
One thing I want to put, Gary asked us, are we going to be range testing the smaller battery pack Ioniq 5? So
kilowatt.
One of the things about that, Gary, is the manufacturers, as far as the press cars, they never give us the small battery versions of the cars. They're not, they just don't put them in their press pools. So for us to do that, we need to get one from an owner. So, hey, if an owner offers Kyle or me their vehicle with the smaller battery pack to do a range test and lets us charge it to 100%, drive it all the way down to zero, then we'd be happy to do it. But we'd need somebody to volunteer us that car. We're not going to get it from Hyundai.
And that's only available, the 58 kilowatt hour battery, that's only available in the lowest trim.
Mm-hmm. The base right. model. So sure, we'll do it.
Pretty good about putting base Mach-Es in the fleet. I don't know. Maybe Hyundai will put one in there. I don't think any have been imported to the U.S. yet, though. I don't think there are any here.
Before we move on, Tom, did we do a winter Tesla Model Y range test? Because I'd be curious to see how that compared to the Hyundai. Because they got similar size batteries, you know, very close, right?
I haven't, and I do have one that I could do. I have a friend that's been offering me his Model Y 2021 to do range tests. So maybe I'll do that before it gets warm here.
I mean, that's one of the most popular electric vehicles in the world now, so it makes a good benchmark, I think.
Yeah. I did a warm weather one when they first came out.
Right.
I think I had 278 or something like that.
Right, so 270, yeah.
Yeah, and I know Kyle's
270s, yeah.
Done them also.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on from Hyundai to another Hyundai, the 2023 Kia Sportage plug-in electric vehicle.
Oh, I played around with it yesterday.
Oh, really? Oh,
awesome. Yeah, I'm at the Chicago Auto Show. Everything's here.
So Kyle's at the Chicago Auto Show, and if you want to see what that looks like, he has a video up yesterday morning of him like taking you through a whole tour of the show floor. And
It's
not all electric. There's still, you know, plenty of internal combustion out there, but there's some electric stuff out there. You got to see the Ford Transit.
Less than 10% electric.
Right. Yeah, I was kind of surprised. Yeah.
It's probably, honestly, 3% electric if you add up the cars or less.
Right.
But Chicago's and, you know, a bit, I'm a combustion enthusiast, so I'm happy there. That's why I'm not recommending you all watch this video. But we geek out about some EVs. There's a Silverado EV I got to see for the first time.
All right. Yeah, true. You're making a video of that?
We're going to shoot it literally right after this.
Okay. Because we want to see how that folds down in the back.
I got to play around with it. It's awesome. It is so freaking cool. The Silverado EV was not on my radar at all. And then they pull this thing in RST trim on 24-inch wheels. Huge wheels. They're like the size of a small planet. And it's like, whoa. And it looks so much better than Hummer EV, and it's got way more cool stuff inside, I think. And it was blue. I think they just like had it presented properly, but it wasn't like right up front in the GM booth. If they have their new Z06 right up front, then you got to walk past the Equinoxes, past the Tahoes, past the Chevy Trax. You go past their charging station, which is your phone charging station, not a real charging station. And then you get to the Silverado EV all the way in the back.
Right. Well, Chicago is a weird show because it's not necessarily like the cutting edge. It used to be more of the trucks and like industrial kind of things. But it's kind of changed a bit now. But it's not like at LA where they put, you know, all their future, the best.
Honestly,
kind of blingy
CES
stuff.
Is the best auto show of the year now, which is a tech show because there's most EVs. Anyway, Silverado EV is the jam. I'm so into it. I see why people are into it. We got to play around with F-150 Lightning and Silverado EV.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, of course, Ioniq, EV6 were here, Mach-Es, everything was blast. Really good time.
All right. All right. So our top story is the Kia Sportage plug-in electric hybrid. Did you say Sportage or you say Sportage?
Sportage.
Okay.
That's like saying Target instead of Target.
Rodeo. So the Sportage is Kia's longest running model, and this is the first time they've offered it, I believe, as a plug-in hybrid. It goes on sale in the third quarter of this year. So the big number here is, modest number is 32, and that's how many miles of electric range it's rated for. It uses a 13.8 kilowatt hour pack to achieve that, and it's got like a 1.6 liter turbocharged four cylinder with 177 horsepower and 195 pound feet of torque. In this case, it's paired up with a 90 horsepower electric motor, 66.9 kilowatts. That's the same setup, it appears, as they use in the Sorento, which is a little, which is larger. And that car puts out 265 horsepower, like altogether. Yeah, with 258 pound feet of torque. So it should be plenty nippy. And I don't really have a whole lot of information about this because it was super late when I was putting the show together last night. And I don't know. I'm still trying to decide how much we want to, you know, focus on like plug-in electric hybrids. How relevant are do you guys think that the plug-in hybrids are now? And what do you think relevant about this car?
They're so annoying is what okay they are. because I don't need to, I can have an hour long video and I will have an hour long video on why I think plug-in hybrids are great for some people and really not great for others. But I got to play around with this. Looks nice. It's basically the same thing as the Tucson plug-in hybrid, I think, is the competitor underneath. Yeah, it's to be expected. Looks really good in person. You can get really nice chunky tires for it and everything. You know, it should allow a lot of electric driving. And we'll play around with it. We'll be getting it soon.
Right.
Oh. So, yeah, Dom, let me chime in real quick. I agree with Kyle as far as I'm not an enthusiast for plug-in hybrids. But, yeah, we do need to cover them because a lot of people are. And a lot of people will not go full EV yet. Right. So we need to talk about the benefits and the disadvantages of plug-in hybrids. So right. I'm actually getting the Sorento plug-in hybrid in a couple of weeks.
Good
for
car.
A week loan. And I'm going to do some videos on that. Kyle's already driven it, but I haven't yet. And we'll talk about the benefits and the disadvantages of going plug-in hybrid. I really try to steer people away from them, to be honest with you. But the fact of the matter is a lot of people just are not ready and will not buy a fully electric car yet. And these are EVs with training wheels and they get people used to plugging in and it gets people comfortable with right. plugging in. So I'm all for the manufacturers continuing to make them until they have a complete portfolio of affordable fully electric vehicles.
We should right. debate this someday because I think it gives you the worst impression of an EV.
Okay. Because it's kind of interesting.
And,
that, like the
original... and if we do that, we need to bring up, sorry, Dom, we need to bring on plug-in hybrid owners and see how they feel about the vehicle. Do they say, like this is terrible. I'll never get an EV now after owning this POS. Or do they say, I love plugging in. Most of my driving's not electric. So
yeah, I mean, hate them because I know both on either side.
Yeah. Right. So what would be great is to have somebody on both sides of that. And we could, you know, talk to the actual owners too, because we're tainted. You know, our opinions are tainted. We've driven so many really good fully electric cars. We've lived with them for years. It's easy, I think, for us to say, like, why would you waste your time with that? You know, but, you do talk to people that, you know, I've talked to so many people that really want an electric vehicle, but they can't pull the trigger. They're not ready to pull the trigger. And then they've gotten like the BMW plug-in hybrids, for instance. And then they're like, yeah, after living with it for 6 months, they're like, yeah, I should have went full electric. This is great. And for that purpose, I think they shouldn't go extinct just yet. But
soon. I just had the new Ford Escape plug-in hybrid. As far as plug-in hybrids go, it was great. But then it's great on one hand. It did 39 miles in the city, by the way, on one charge. That's awesome. That's RAV4 Prime numbers almost right there. Look, this is a long topic to debate. I'm not personally against plug-in hybrids. It's a good use case for me. I drove that Escape for a week. I think I used gas like one time. And so but then why did I haul around that giant combustion engine and get 3.1 miles per kilowatt hour when I could have gotten something way more efficient with way more range that I didn't even need? So this is the topic I think it struggles with.
And Boston Dan's 100% right. I've owned both fully electric all the way. You're right. If you've owned both, the answer will be fully electric all the way, but you're 3% of the population. That 97% of the population, many of those people will not go full electric just yet. They're just not ready for it. It's easy for us and especially a lot of our fans to talk about how it's, you know, there's no decision, just buy an EV. Unless you have a use case like Kyle explains where you live in the Midwest, you drive 500 miles every week, you know, to tow stuff and everything, and it might not work for you, but the fact of the matter is we can't live in this vacuum that we sometimes see, only see that, you know, of course electric vehicles work because we own them and we live with them. We need to get mainstream people that have never even considered an EV to plug in, and sometimes the plug-in hybrids work for that purpose.
Right.
So, but yeah, maybe we will do a debate one show.
I love Brandon's comment down here because it's so accurate. It gives you not range anxiety, but gas anxiety because you plug it in everywhere. I keep knocking this dang light. You plug it in everywhere, and you try not to have the combustion engine kick on.
Yeah. Right. Hey, so that points that it is still a good option for some people. Jacob Marley mentioned earlier that 32 miles of battery only operation allows 98% of his driving to be EV, but it also allows him to visit his family in West Virginia, where there isn't a whole lot of fast charging unless you have a Tesla. I think there's a fair amount of Tesla chargers there now, but there's still some infrastructure that needs to be put into West Virginia. And it's also interesting that the OG of plug-in electric vehicles, GM, doesn't make one anymore. They've left that behind. They're all electric now, and it's just like the other brands like Kia. And we also saw the 2023 Alfa Romeo Tonale plug-in hybrid, debut this week. And that's going to be coming to the US in about a year from now. And it's got you could get it with a regular, like a 1.3 liter multi-air turbocharged four cylinder gas engine. That's the plug-in hybrid motor, actually. Sorry. So the combustion version is a 2 liter turbo four, and it's like 256 horsepower. And they're all all-wheel drive. The plug-in electric hybrid version of that has the 1.3 liter multi-air turbocharged four cylinder with a high voltage belt starter generator, which I'm not sure what that does, a 6-speed automatic transmission, and a 90 kilowatt or 121 horsepower electric motor on the rear axle, and that makes 272 horsepower. So the spicy one might be the plug-in hybrid, actually, in that case.
It's such an uninspiring design, if you ask me.
I think it looks great, really?
I like the front end, but that is it. The rest of it, cut off that front end and tell me what vehicle that is. What is it, a Ford Escape or something? Like, they got lazy. Or they just decided to make Aero the primary focus, and Alphas are supposed to really have distinctive styling, and I think that is just cookie cutter black.
They have a very sporty heritage for sure, right? Italian.
Looks great. I just am very disappointed with the drivetrain options. This should have the Maserati MC20's twin turbocharged V6 inside to give it a real spicy thing, but we're an EV podcast. So,
I mean, if that's an option, they're going to have a gas option and a plug-in electric hybrid option. I'm not sure why their gas option, their gas option just doesn't, this is like the size of a BMW X1, I understand, right?
Yeah, and their 2 liter is so crunchy and not great. It makes a lot of torque, but it hates to rev. It's not an inspiring engine. It shouldn't be installed inside of an Alfa, in my opinion. And there's so many better engines they can pull from their parts bin to put in this thing.
Right. Stewie Thomas says it looks like Martin's MG.
Yeah, and then the next comment's the best. Martin sitting in the timeout chair. Okay, Martin, please chime in this vehicle because we want to make sure you're alive.
I've been enjoying putting the pictures up and the captions, and
you're not working. It's just we haven't heard you.
Well, hey, this definitely isn't work. But I was surprised. I read the press release, and as I was reading it, they talked a lot about hybrid technology, and as Dom says, the electric starter motor generator, and they were all about how hybrid technology can help reduce your miles per gallon. And that is kind of language and a philosophy that probably worked 10 years ago, was a bit long in the tooth 5 years ago, and now it really is a last resort if you're not going to make a full EV. But to try and, if I did a word search, electrified would probably have been the most commonly used word, because like electrified is the thing that they've got to fall back on, because it sounds like it's electric, but electrified gets them out of the hole. So yeah, I mean, I think disappointing for Alfa, and there's a lot of stuff that should be on this car in terms of a full electric powertrain. Like, they're a big enough company and they've got enough across their brands to pull in from. And as I'm always saying on my podcast, we are really spoiled here in Europe in terms of, we've got, I've been talking about the e-transit, for instance, And that is, that's really it for you guys. There's the Bright Drop vans, but you've just, you know, delivered to customers yesterday or this week is the Transit. Whereas over here, we've got all the Citroën and the Peugeots, and there's even a Toyota rebadged version of those. And we've got a ton of commercial vehicles. So they've got enough in
Mercedes
in their locker to do something interesting with all of their brands, let alone this, which just comes with a plug-in. But yeah, I think kind of disappointing, but they know their customers better than I do. So it wouldn't be for me. It's exactly, I agree with you guys exactly. My head understands plug-in hybrids. My heart would never own one just because I've lived EV. But I understand intellectually the decision-making process that our viewers who own hybrids go through. Like, I need the engine, I want the electric, but it wouldn't be for me just because I'm done with servicing oily bits, unless it's something kind of interesting, like, I don't know, like a classic car in the garage or something. So that's kind of where I'm on this car.
Right. So like I said, I didn't do a lot of prep last night for the show. So that's
basically we're already an hour and 10 minutes in, and I got a giant auto show behind me. I got to cover.
Right. But I did want to mention, if you haven't watched Martin's show yesterday, I did want to put this in the show notes, but I just didn't get to it. That so the White House rolls out a $5 billion funding plan. That's out of a $7.5 billion thing altogether, or $7.3 billion. The rest of that money is going to be allocated this summer, but they just rolled out that $5 billion of that is going to be given to the states recently. And during that presentation, Biden did something that he hasn't done before, and see if I can do this properly.
No, there you go. Sorry, no. I put it still up, but you might have the video handy.
I do have the video handy.
Oh, there you go. You do it.
From iconic companies like GM and Ford building out new electric vehicle production to Tesla, our nation's largest electric vehicle manufacturer.
He did it. Oh, well. It's all over. Podcast 1300.
Whoa, and, hey, get rid of it.
He did it. Like, that's it. Fantastic. We sing from the heavens. Biden said the T word. Can we all now please move on? Although one of our mutual friends, Pete Bremmy, did email me to say, no, I'm really serious about this because I want our president to recognize the number one EV maker. Because I've kind of not belittled it, but just said, look, come on, it's ridiculous. Elon Musk doing silly tweets doesn't build bridges. As an observer of American politics, I was always told your president is always about, he's one of those guys that reaches across the aisle and builds bridges. Like, the fact that he wouldn't say Tesla for union reasons or what personal reasons, like, I don't like what Elon Musk tweets half the time. Some of the things that he's tweeted over the years about certain people and the cave issue, like, I don't find that his humor, but if you're a politician, you've got to get past all that. Like,
yeah.
I appreciate what he does as a businessman and the businesses he builds. I don't particularly like some of the stuff he tweets, but you can't just not mention Tesla out of those personal reasons. If Biden felt the same as I do, but particularly not because he's meant to be building bridges. And yeah, their politics are entirely different. Like, do you remember when Elon Musk was an advisor to Donald Trump? That lasted like 3 seconds, but I do get the feeling that Musk's politics are probably very different to Biden's, but
right.
You can't not mention Tesla for that reason or because it's not unionized or whatever. So
not when it's done so much, you know, for the electrification of transport, which is like their goal to reduce carbon. And, you know, that's Tesla's really set the tone and the pace. And
their goal is to make money, Dominic. It's not to do anything like that. It is to sell cars.
So what for whatever reason, you haven't got to be his best friend, and you certainly haven't got to endorse the company like he's endorsing Ford and he's endorsing General Motors and he's having a big love-in with Mary Barra, etc. And I get all the reasons why with unionized labor. And as listeners of my podcast and viewers know, that's probably where politically I lean. Like, I like collective bargaining for the workers. Like, I like workers to be able to get together and for the little man to fight against the big man. That's kind of where I am politically. But it's fine if you don't agree with me. We'll still be friends. And so, but for Biden not to be, or even anyone who speaks like Pete Buttigieg, for him not to be coming out and praising Tesla for the things they do well. Now, equally in his role, if Tesla start to come under more pressure for their autonomy suite, and there has to be some intervention there from government agencies to, and there's been three Tesla recalls this week, whether you agree they should or not be called a recall, they are. So yeah, again, I know you have to, you have to tread carefully if you're a politician. I get it. You can't be someone's best friend because it, you know, lands you in it if they then misbehave. But at least recognize the work that, as we found out this week in the 10K filing on Monday, Tesla has 100,000 employees. I don't know how many are in Germany or China, but say, like, I don't know, 75,000 in the US. Like, that's a lot of American citizens right. who are doing an amazing job at Tesla. And so it was ridiculous that he wouldn't do it. I'm so pleased it's all over.
Right.
Maybe he'll never say that word again, but fantastic that he did.
So before we end, I did want to mention there's a few stories I just want to just mention briefly. And you can find these on Inside EVs. The 2022 Volkswagen ID.4 is coming with a few changes this year, next year. So DC fast charging is going to be improved somewhat. It's going to peak at 135 kilowatts instead of 125. I'm not sure how that'll change the overall time charging time. It'll have an auto hold feature, a plug and charge feature, which I don't know why it's taking this long, but it's coming at least, and that makes the charging experience a lot more seamless. You just plug it in, it charges, it bills you, and it's like a Tesla, easy peasy. And also,
if you find the charging station that supports plug and charge, sorry, I had to interrupt that.
No, that's good. And we should mention that to all the different infrastructure companies that we speak with.
It will be on our discussions for sure.
Yeah, get that friction out of the process. And it also gets a small undisclosed range increase. So that's something. I don't know. I think anyone wanted to mention anything about that.
I think it also allows for the vehicle to load or vehicle to grid VW charger when it arrives on the scene, which should be imminent, I gather. So
okay.
That allows CCS, the same as the other ones that aren't CHAdeMO, to be a backup for your house.
Okay.
We should point out, though, that Volkswagen did promise plug and charge before the end of 2021. They didn't fulfill that promise.
Right. Okay. Moving on, Ram Revolution electric pickup has been teased. That's the name of the new electric pickup that Ram, which is part of Stellantis. And they give a little silhouette so you can kind of get an idea what's coming. And, you know, there's not a lot there, but I think it's worth at least mentioning that because we've seen like the Ford F-150 Lightning coming and the Silverado EV and the GMC Sierra EV is coming, and of course the GMC Hummer, which is a little less pickup trucky, I think, in the traditional sense. But you know, Ram is getting there eventually, and it's going to be called the Revolution, which is, I think, I don't know, decent name. Kyle, it doesn't scare and I gotcha.
I don't know, name confirmed, whoa.
Right. It's not, but at least we know that it's on the
revolution.
Way.
Why is everything a revolution with electric? It's just the way it should have been.
Right.
It's going Ram the way it should have been.
And speaking of,
I do love a Hemi V8. Don't get me wrong. Give me a TRX. I'll be happy any day of the week.
So speaking of, Martin was talking about electric vans earlier. So Ford has started shipping its 2022 E-Transit vans to U.S. customers. I believe you saw that there in Chicago, Kyle.
Yep, seen it many times. Love everything about it. I can't wait to drive it. They held this little event of small journalists that cover like industry stuff to go and drive it. I was so jealous. Everyone can be out driving whatever new hot McLaren 720S, I hit the light again, that they're doing. People go and drive the E-Transit. I just really wanted to drive that so bad.
Right.
Talking about the E-Transit before we get off of that, Dom. So, you know, we talked about the U.S. Post Office wanting to convert to electric. And,
oh my God.
You know, the previous the Postmaster General was going to buy like 70% ICE vehicles. And now they're talking about maybe revamping that. OK, we have one. Why can't the E-Transit be reconfigured to be the mail truck? You know, that was some of the issue early on, was that one of the complaints was, well, we don't really have one that would work perfectly in a company that can scale up to build it. Okay, we have one now, and it's in production. Use that.
Man, that postal vehicle is almost like a whole show. I think they really should just scrap it and go start again from the bottom up.
Yeah, that thing was so freaking ugly.
Yeah, I don't know and I don't have a whole lot, you know, maybe Oshkosh makes good, whatever they make, they've, you know, been in business for a long time.
Giant military trucks that are awesome.
Right. I don't have, you know, huge amount of confidence they can do as good a job as, you know, someone who's making electric vehicles for you know, a decade or something. So
E-Transit would be perfect.
Right. I mean, well, I think they'd have to, I don't know. I think really it needs to be from the, like, wheels up vehicle, you know, specific. I mean, it could do a lot of, you know, because the USPS does use like minivans from Stellantis or Chrysler or whatever already now, or from different manufacturers, but like the standard little truck that you see coming up every day on your house.
Yeah, we have like lifted four-wheel drive stuff for some of our rural mountain deliveries. It's pretty sweet.
Right on. All right. So, and just moving on, I guess before we end, I just also wanted to say that the VW ID. Buzz is going to make its first public appearance in Austin on March 11th.
South by Southwest.
Yep. At South by Southwest. Yes. But that's just a weird place. It's almost like, I don't know, what else is in Austin, Texas now? Tesla headquarters and Gigafactory.
I don't think it has anything to do with that.
Yeah? You think it's just a pure, I mean,
it's a cool event.
Head of Volkswagen and Tesla and Elon, they get along somewhat. They've been, you know, hung out together, driven each other's cars, I think. And, you know, they have an amicable relationship, or have had. So it's kind of interesting that the VW Buzz is going to make its debut there. In
I just want this to be brilliant, and I'm worried because the price is leaked. I don't mind how high the price is because I wasn't going to buy one anyway, and EV buyers have a bit of price elasticity, so they'll do the stretch to get an EV. But the price is leaked this week out of two German publications, and it kind of matched from what they both said. And they were giving prices for the 77 kilowatt hour version. And I'm like, please tell me there's one above it. There has to be one above it. That it can't come with the same battery as a big ID4.
Let's hope they put a big 100 something kilowatt hour.
Yeah, well, the platform, the MEB platform, can take 111. Yep. So it was designed to take 111. So please, 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 I don't care what it costs, make it a halo vehicle, because few people will buy it anyway. But that gets the headlines. Then make a 40 grand version we can all drive.
Yep.
But, oh, please don't make this like 150 mile. It'll be a laughing stock. And I want to love this so much.
I think they know what they're doing. And I think it's going to be expensive. And I think it's going to be super rad. I can't wait for it.
You say you saw some price leaks, Martin?
Yeah, two price leaks, and they were both kind of the same. It was two German publications went with the pricing this week, which was 70,000 euros. Whoa. Of course, we include VAT. I think Germany is still 20% VAT. Yeah. And that is, if I get my calculator out here, and so 70,000 euros is going to be, for our US audience, that converts to 80,000 US dollars, but of course, taxes and things
we include ours. Often, you can almost do like a one-for-one exchange in a way, because they sell vehicles in the U.S. a lot cheaper. I don't know if it's because of the volume, so they sell cheaper or what it is, but often the price in pounds or euros will be very close to what we have here. So I'm thinking this will be close to like a Tesla Model Y range, like 60,000.
I think this thing could be 100 grand, and they'll sell every single one of them, course, without question.
Yeah,
it launches so as a five-seater. Nice.
Yep. Yep. Make it expensive, make it nice, and make it a halo car. Don't try and get this in the hands of the masses. They'll work their way down there.
Exactly.
You can come out with versions later.
Right. Starts with a five-seat version, then comes later this year with a three-seat, seven-seater. And I really hope that Marvin has inside information. Firstly, he spelled my name correctly, so I love Marvin already. We can be best friends.
What a guy.
I hope he has information that I don't. Because,
okay, so maybe it's cheaper than that.
Let's hope it's cheap. I mean, the articles also said base price 40, starting at 40 for like the kind of commercially no frills fabric seats version. But hey, I don't care about that. I want there to be. it's time to stop. I think we've all got giddy.
Yes.
All right. So that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up. That helps us out a lot if you're watching us on YouTube. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. You can follow Tom Malogny at Tomalog. That's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily watch a show every day. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. And I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. And we'll see you all again next week or maybe even sooner. Okay, ciao.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Moto Casino.
America's social casino. From smoke and carbon monoxide detectors to fire extinguishers and more, Hitta Home Safety products keep your family protected in case of emergencies. Did you know that your detectors need to be replaced every 5 to 10 years? Hitta detectors feature enhanced sensing technology that reduces false alarms and fast alerts for more time to get out safely. Visit us in-store or on Menards.com and shop our great selection of Hitta safety products.
Save big money at Menards.
Protect your boats and recreational vehicles with FBP RV and Marine antifreeze. It has burst-proof protection down to negative 50 degrees, keeping you protected against freezing temperatures. Keep your winter worry-free with FBP ready-to-use RV and Marine antifreeze now at Menards. Visit us in-store or on Menards.com and shop our great selection of automotive products.
Save